Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
All right, now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is Steelers Hall of Famer and TNT Guest Hall of Famer, Greg Lloyd. And as you guys know, Greg's my all-time favorite player. He's a guy who has been open, honest, and telling it like it is since the first time he joined us a little over 5 years ago. He's from Miami, Florida, played his college ball at Fort Valley State, which is in South Georgia, where he was a three-time All-Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference selection. There, he was a three-time defensive MVP, and as a senior, he was the Conference Player of the Year and a first-team Sheridan All-American. He was a sixth-round draft pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1987 and played in the league from 87 to 1998, almost all with the Steelers, played his last season in Carolina. He was selected to five straight Pro Bowls from 1992 to 96, was the AFC Defensive Player of the Year in 1994. He's a member of the Steelers' all-time team and was inducted into their Hall of Honor last year. Sometimes, folks, you know, in life, we get to meet our sports heroes, and they're not like we hoped they would be, and that's absolutely not the case with Greg. He's been fantastic every single time we've had the privilege of having him on the show, and tonight's the 10th time, which is a huge honor, and we are very excited he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Greg, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hi, Greg.
Hey, guys, how's it going? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you and yours. Greg, I got to start off on a somber note. Want to get your thoughts on the passing of Kevin Green. What a great talent, what a great Steeler for the years that you guys got the opportunity to play together. And I know you were there when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. Just wanted you to reflect a moment on Kevin.
Well, you know, it's real tough, guys, when you lose somebody that, not just a teammate. I mean, you know, Kevin was a friend, and see, friend for me is something that's few and far and in between, if you know what I mean. And, you know, kind of almost count them on my hands. But Kevin was a friend. He's that guy that, you know, we didn't talk that much, but when we got back together, we just picked up from where we left off at. But more important than that, you know, Kevin was he was a family man. He was a father. He was a husband. He loved God. You know, and those are the things that, you know, those are the kind of people you want in your life and you want around you, you know. I mean, we did some crazy, said some crazy stuff, had some crazy sound bites playing football. But, you know, it's kind of like I tell people all the time, I think I used to tell you guys all the time, it's kind of like going out and, you know, Clark Kent going into the phone booth and coming out being Superman. I mean, that's a role we play. But, you know, people who really know us are those family people. And Kevin, when he came to us then, I believe it was 92. And we spent 3 years together all season. Kevin came to my house. I went to visit him when he lived in Anniston and stuff like that. So we really got to know each other. And I could really appreciate him and stuff like that. So for me, I took it hard. I was still taken aback and still in unbelief after 3 days of hearing, you know, after hearing this. And then it probably didn't soak in until LeVon Kirkland came to the house, and he and I drove to Destin for this for his passing, you know, with family, and it kind of set in then. You know, and you know, the a good person, you know, this world has lost a you know, a good father, a good person, a good husband, you know, definitely a, you know, great football player, Hall of Famer by no means, but you know, by all means. But at the same time, like you say, he was just a good friend to. If you know, to those he came in contact with, you know, he was Kevin Gray. I mean, I don't even think that I can say what I need to say about Kevin, you know, in the time that we have a lottery. Just know that he'll be missed by all of us. And, you know, I'm just sincerely thrilled that I had the opportunity to play with him and get to know him.
And Greg, I went back and watched Kevin's Hall of Fame speech, and he talked about how upset the rest of the defense was when someone made a solo tackle because you guys were supposed to hold the guy up so everyone else can get a piece of that tackle. Is that accurate?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, if you could talk about sound bites, if they had us mic'd up, you guys would be cracking up, man, you know, because we were saying some crazy stuff. I mean, there's a couple of times in there. I think I've seen a couple of times in there when, especially quarterbacks, you know, like now, I mean, you know, we would probably, Kevin and I would probably still be, you know, retired and still paying fines from our pension, you know, with the way you have to treat quarterbacks now. But definitely, you know, the thing was all about game tackling. Somebody go out and make a single tackle. He's like, come on, man, hold him up just a little bit longer, you know, and stuff. And we, you know, but we laugh about it. We get to the sideline, stuff like that. Because, you know, our motto back then was we were literally trying to make people quit playing football. We didn't care about tackling. We didn't care about, I mean, not in the sense like they tackle now, if that's what you want to call it. But we wanted people to feel the pain every down. We wanted people to quit. We wanted to hear the announcement when people got back to wherever they went, when we left, to say that every one of their offensive linemen, backs, and quarterbacks decided to retire. That's how we went out on the field. Now, I know that's being, you know, a little, you know, out there, but that's the way we practiced. That's the way we trained. That was our mentality. And that's why we were the way we were when we played.
Greg, I got to get your thoughts on the Steelers here the last few weeks. Obviously, the season didn't end the way any of us wanted to. And boy, it sure seemed like after 11-0, things went way off the rails. I know we had a lot of injuries and things of that nature, but an embarrassing loss to the Cleveland Browns. I thought I woke up and went to hell after I saw watched that game. Well, what are your thoughts? Wow.
Well, I mean, I 11-0, you know, historically for the Steelers, I mean, it's a history, you know, they made history and all that. I knew somewhere in there that they would lose a game. Matter of fact, between you and me, I was hoping that they would lose a game just to get that monkey off their back. You know, but let them lose a game to somebody that was good. Let's lose it. Let's still keep fighting. Let's fight. But let's lose a game to somebody that at least got a mascot. Freaking. Yeah, you got, you know, somebody that just ain't named the Detroit football team or the Washington. You got to be freaking kidding me. So I let it go. You know, I could say a lot about it, but I let it go. But then after that, it was just like, it almost like complacency set in, you know. And in my head, because I live here in Atlanta, I had watching the last, you know, five games or so that they were playing, it just reminded me of the second half of the New England-Atlanta Super Bowl. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
And it was like, we got this thing won, we're going to do this, and then we're going to come out on the second half, and we're not going to do anything we did the first half. We're just going to play prevent defense. We're going to be lackadaisical. I mean, dude, it was garbage. And that's something you don't hardly – I don't think I've used the word garbage concerning the Pittsburgh Steelers since I retired. It was garbage. I mean, straight garbage.
Mm-hmm. Bob, questions for Greg?
Always a pleasure to speak with you, Greg. And we're going to stay on that topic of garbage because last few weeks we've talked about the lack of tackling, which you just brought up. Arthur Motes talked to us. Victor Green talked about us. These guys are just disgusted with how many missed tackles they see, how many whiffs, how many guys are jumping over people. I can go on and on. I needed to get Greg Lloyd's attitude and quotes about this because it's just so bad, and I'm seeing it even in the playoffs, Greg. It's, what are they teaching guys at the college level, high school level, or is this ever going to get fixed?
Well, I mean, again, you understand it now, and I get it, but I don't agree with it. This is my, with all these new rules and tackling and all this stuff. The faces of the NFL have changed so much because of the new hitting and tackling rule. So you can find almost anybody that's fast and can catch and can run playing in the NFL now because guys like me are antiquated. Guys like, you know, Kevin Green and Ray and all those guys, we're not there anymore because when we play, we hit you in the mouth. We hit you underneath the chin. We hit you. See, guys know they can't do that anymore. So tackling is not stressed anymore. Because guys are more concerned about, coach, I don't want to get fined. I don't want to do this. You know, and like I say, I see both sides of it. I know it's a catch-22. I see both sides of it. I understand you don't want to get tackled. But if it's me, see, I'm, that's what you're at. If it's me, my thing's going to be, that's me. That's my number. That's my name on the back of my jersey. And when that camera flashes on there, those people, most people out there are ignorant to the fact that what the rules are and stuff like that. Most people, all they want to care about is get him on the ground. And then they will kind of say, oh, man, that was a bad call. That was this, that was that, that was that. My thing of it is, if it's my responsibility to tackle the guy, I got to tackle him by any means necessary. That's my job. I'm talking about within the rules. I'm not talking about tripping, face masking, and shoulder pulling. I'm talking within the rules. But my thing of it is, if it's something that I know that needs to be stressed, then guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to pull one of them young rookie tight ends, one of them rookie fullbacks that we got, and it's like, hey, listen, man, we ain't got to go full speed, but before or after practice, run the football, and I'm going to practice angle tackling. You know what I mean, I'm probably going to take you down, you know, so, you know, whatever, but I'm going to take you down. That might, you know, he might get a dinner out of it. But you have to do what you have to do because this is their craft. This is what you do for a living, and this is what you are putting on the table now for people to see. You want me to eat this crap when I turn my television on, and I'm like, I can't do it because it's spoiled. This food that y'all putting on, this football, this tackling stuff that you guys are putting on is such garbage. That's where it belongs, such spoiled, and it belongs in the garbage, the word we talk about. And like I said, I understand that you can't expect the guy to come in there and change directions and make his body do all these kind of things, try to hit a guy. But you got to make a tackle. You got to know how to tackle. And again, it's, you are not in the seventh grade and in the eighth grade and in the 12th grade anymore where coaches are teaching. You should know how to tackle by now. And it's your job as a professional to know everything about your position and to put a product out on the field that's you, the best you. That's not a coach's job. Coach's job is to get you the information. Your job is to do all the physical stuff. And so I don't blame coaches for that. I blame individuals for that. You know, and like I said, that's within the context of the rule. And I know they don't play like we used to play and everybody wants to bring that back. But within the rules, man, you got to tackle. Like I said, Kevin and LeBron and all the guys that we played with, you know, Chad's and, you know, man, we would still be paying fines under these new rules. We would still be paying fines and be retired. But the ideal of it, we're going to get them down, you know. And like I say, it's just bad. I know you got, if we hate it and we don't like it, I know you guys don't like it. And I can't even apologize to you guys because there's really nothing that we can do about it. But I guess as an individual, I would like, if it was me in that position and playing now, hindsight, you know, 2020 going forward, I would put myself in a position to make sure that I at least knew how and I practiced tackle. You can't expect the guy to go out and tackle if they're not practicing tackling during the week, during the season. You can't expect them to do it. So, you know, it's up to the individual. And like you say, if you are a team leader, if you are a captain, if you are a Pro Bowler, all pro, all world, or whatever the heck they call them now when they make a couple of good plays, if you're that person, then that should be your job, making sure that everybody out there is good at form tackling. That's what you should be doing. You know, one of the things that we had when we was in Pittsburgh is that we had a thing called accountability. You know, and we was accountable to not Bill Cowher. We weren't accountable to Marvin Lewis and Dom Capers. We were accountable to those 10 other guys that were out there on that field. That's who we were accountable to because that's who I was playing with. Those were the only guys out there that mattered for 60 minutes. And we hold each other accountable. You jump offside, my bad. Got to go make a play. I'll make up for that. You know, make your play. Don't go sticking your head where it don't belong. I'm counting on you to make that play. Those were the things that we did, but we practiced that way. That's what we did. And I don't think it's, as a matter of fact, I only have to say, I think, I know it's not being done because the product is showing up on television. You know, and it has to be some of the nastiest, stinkiest stuff that you guys have seen and smelt in a long time, you know. And that's why I don't watch it. And I know that everybody thinks that you retire from football and we eat, sleep. When I played football, that's what I did because I had to get myself ready. But I cannot watch it now. I cannot watch it.
And to piggyback off what you said about how you guys approach the game, Greg, and how you actually hit during the week in practice, guys are getting hurt now more than they ever did. And, you know, you didn't All those guys you mentioned that you play with, you've missed very few games. Is it a combination of the training methods, the guy's not playing hurt anymore, or is it just a combination of all this stuff?
I kind of think it's a combination of things. I mean, it's like if I go into a game and I know what my opponent is capable of doing, I've studied him all week long, I've watched him, you know, 8, 9, 10 games or maybe more, 20 games or how, you know, how he played and probably some games we play. Once I go in the game, I have everything that I need. It's no different when it comes to training. Training is something when you're an NFL player, you really ain't got no time off. If I, like when I first came into the league until I left, there was no off season. I mean, it was because, you know, to bring in baseball and basketball like that. But as an off season, there's no off season. You're always training. You're always trying to get yourself better. Why? Because there's another class coming in. There's a group of young guys coming in. And they drafted another group of young guys 4 or 5 years behind you. Your thing is that you got to keep working and you got to keep outworking and you got to outwork them guys. You got to make sure that, you know, you're in that top shape. But on top of that also, you may get a guy that's going to help you out and you don't mind showing him how to do it. So it is a combination of those things. But I think that once you understand what the rules are and everybody has them and it applies to everybody, there's something as a team, as leaders of the team, that you can do to say, hey, listen, we're going to be the best tackling team out there. We're going to do it within the confines of the rules. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to practice doing it. Okay? And you take that completely out of the equation. It's not a question, you know? Because if I were to ask both of you guys right now, who's the best tackling team in NFL that's still in the, you know, of the 14 that's in the game? Who would you say?
I guess my thought would be Tampa Bay.
That's the first thing came to my mind. I would say Tampa Bay. And if you got a team like that, I know everybody's whooping and thinking that, but you know, you got a battle of the Bays coming up here, you know, so, and I'm thinking, I know Aaron Rodgers is all that. I know he's a goat like Tom Brady and all that. I know he is. But man, when I look at how that Tampa Bay defense run around and hit and tackle, I go, that can make a difference in a ball game. That can make a difference in a ball game. Everybody always talk about, you know, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. But, you know, like you said, hey, listen, man, if they can't score, they can't win. And that's how I always look at it. So that's the gist of it, man. I mean, you know, if you don't have a good defense and if you're not running the ball to run the clock out on offense, you're not going to win a Super Bowl. You're not going to win. There's no way. There's no way you can win. But metal, you might not even win a game. You got to be able to stop people. You got to be able to stop the run, and you got to be able to run the ball. I know that sounds crazy, but you got to have a defense that stops the run, and you got to have an offense that can run the ball. If you can do that, you can win. And like you say, you got to have a team that can tackle. And the Steelers have done a poor job of it. I don't want to talk about anybody else. I played there. Everybody knows the history and all that behind that. But they did a poor job. I mean, they got after the quarterback. Don't get me wrong. They got the quarterback and things of that nature, but, man, I mean, boy, they looked awful. I mean, they looked awful. I mean, I'm talking about in every aspect of the game, they looked awful. You know, I mean, I like you said, I woke up that morning after the Cleveland game, and I didn't watch the game. I just woke up and I saw 28-0 in the first quarter. I was like, oh my God, no wonder I didn't watch that. I'm like, what happened? But just something said like, oh wow. And then in your own backyard, on top of that, you know.
Yeah.
That's like your neighbor coming over to your backyard and pulling his pants down and taking the crap. And then looking at you and saying, that's right. And walking back in the house. You know, it's like, what? I'm like, come on, man. So I was kind of upset about that. But, hey, listen, man, like I said, they have to correct it. I mean, it's not that far. It's not something that can't be done. And I'm sure Coach Tomlin will address it and get it done. And things of that nature. But, hey, man, the game is played for, you know, it's played for a reason. It's played as many games you play for a reason. But it's a 60-minute game. It's a 60-minute game for 17 games or 16 games or however long you play. And if you can't, you know, play at a level that's so high for that long, then, you know, teams are going to, you know, they're going to expose you. And that's what happened. Like you said, you can't go out there and throw 65 times and not run the football. You can't go sack the quarterback 2 times and let him run 200-some yards. It don't matter. You know, you got to be balanced out. So we can talk about this all night, guys. So get me off of this before they be calling me telling me I'm just stealing. So give me, y'all. You guys got to save me. Please save me here. You know?
So Greg, I got to say something that I'm biased about, and it's about guys wearing 95, right? Because as you know, you're my favorite player, and when I see guys that put the 95 on, I mean, whether it's Jarvis Jones or Chris Wormley this year, and they're stinking up the joint, it makes me mad. Yeah. I'm like, you can't put 95 on and play like that. Does it make you mad?
See, you have to join my family with that now. My sister, you know, I'm the youngest of 9 here, so my sisters and brothers will go. They'll call me and go, Greg, who is that wearing your jersey? I said, y'all know I don't watch that. I don't know. I said, you calling me, so obviously he must suck. And they go. Not only do he suck, who is he? We've never heard of it. Does he play? I said, girl, I don't have no, you know, say so over there. I said, they got to get somebody a jersey. I said, but I understand. You guys used to that jersey running around causing havoc, and it's sitting over there on the bench, or it's doing something that ain't got no business, you know, things of that nature. And so I had a talk with young Jarvis. You know, Jarvis is a Georgia boy. And, and I got a chance to see the kid play and stuff like this. But we spent some time in Mexico together doing some stuff with the Steelers over there, you know, and we were doing some teaching some football skills to the guys over there. So I got a chance to spend some time with him. And, between you and us, I knew he wasn't going to be that long. And I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to leave it just at that. I never said anything about 95. I just went up to him and said, you know, I introduced myself. I said, all right, man, you got to represent with that jersey on. And I left it at that. But I just saw, and when I talked to him, and then I saw what he's off season. And, you know, even in off season, if I went out of town somewhere, one of the things I had to make sure I did was there was somewhere I could work out, somewhere I could run. Because again, that's how I made my living. You know what I mean? So I had to make sure I took care of my body, and it was just so opposite of that. And so, you know, to myself and to some guys that I knew it wouldn't go nowhere, I was like, okay, this guy got when his contract is up. I said, when his contract is up, oh, still gonna get rid of him. And they go, why you say that, Greg? I said, I'm just saying, first round draft choice, bro, he's garbage. And that Steelers have been notorious for picking Huey Richardson and Jarvis Jones, and, you know, we can go on and on. I mean, you know, they're not the only team, but right now, that would be the only team I'm talking about, because that's the team I play. Everybody else don't matter. I like you, Chris. I bleed black and gold. I bleed black and gold.
Right.
All that care about the black and gold, all that other stuff, what somebody else is doing does not matter. You know, that's like, you know, hey, listen, I got to fix my house. I don't care. The other man's roof is off. Once I get my house fixed, I go over there and help him. But I got to fix mine first. And that's what the Steelers got to concentrate on. And that's the mentality guys have to take, you know. And there's nothing wrong when you teaching somebody how to become a professional. Yeah, you got drafted, but I'm going to teach you how to do this. I'm going to teach you how to be in this league for 10 years. I'm going to teach you how to practice. I'm going to teach you how to study. I'm going to teach you how to take care of your body. I'm going to teach you how to stay out of trouble and, you know, things of that nature right there. You know, they, like you say, you know, get, some guys will get it, some guys won't, some guys will have it sometimes, some guys won't. But, you know, it's a shot in the dark sometimes. But I just think the Steelers got to do a better job everywhere. I mean, everywhere. They got to do a better job. Like you said, there is no way in the heck Pittsburgh Steelers should be throwing the ball. Pittsburgh Steelers, I mean, when you think of it as a bruising defense. And by the way, guys, let me say this, get up to you real quick. I don't know if you guys know, and you probably do know, but I know we talked about Kevin, but, you know, Tim Lester, who was the bus driver for
Jordan,
he passed away also of COVID. And he's right here in Atlanta. Tim does a 60 for 60 for the NFL, and I've gone out to help him out quite a few times. So you guys, say your prayers and, you know, send some shouts out to him and his wife and two boys. And everything, but I think next the 28th, I think it's next Wednesday or Thursday, they're having service down here for him. So, you know, you guys just keep him in mind when you guys are doing that. But yeah, I just wanted to say that Tim was, you know, he's a good guy. He's a really good guy, you know, also. But, you know, hey, man, that's, like I said, for me, I just think, like I say, Pittsburgh's going to have to go in and they're going to have to take a look at their identity and what they want to be. Do they want to be a passing team? Do they want to be a run team? Do they want to be a defense that goes after the quarterback? Or do they want to be an all-around defense that stops the run and then open up their blitz take? You know, and so you'd be called Blitzbird again. And because, you know, we haven't seen it. I haven't seen it. I just haven't seen it. And it just really, you know, it really, really makes me angry that you have a lot of guys around there with a lot of talent, but only, you know, three or four guys are the only ones that keep showing up every game. Can't have it.
Greg, to that end, one more before we let you go. And I want to talk, you talk about teaching and what the Steelers' identity is. And it, one of the things that just continues not to make sense to us are why players like you or LeVon or Chad or guys like Leon Searcy or Damani Dotson, I mean, it could go on and on, the great players that were there in the 90s. Why you guys aren't coaching for the Steelers? I mean, how Greg Lloyd isn't the linebackers coach, or at least the outside linebackers coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers, makes zero sense to us. Why are you guys not being tapped?
All right, I'm gonna say this now, and then you know, you guys may have to be my attorneys later on. But this is how it goes. You know me. I don't. I'm gonna tell you like it is. I think I told you guys. You know, I've been on your show quite some time. In 2010, I coached in Tampa Bay. I did a internship for Andy Reid and Philly Man Cardell Lake for preseason, and then the following year I did an internship in Tampa Bay for Raheem Morris when he was the head coach there, and you know, he kept. But he kept me based on the fact that I wasn't just interacting with the linebackers. I was telling the offensive linemen what we see, what we do as an offensive linebacker, people, what the little things that they do that give away run and pass, try not to do it. You know, things that we look for when they try to, you know, get there. You know, so Rod kept me because of that, not just because of outside. The linebackers I had that year, I had one good linebacker that was Barry Rude. Remember Be Rude?
Absolutely.
B. Rude was the only linebacker on that defense that was decent. Everybody else, garbage. They were straight garbage. And every day, that's what they heard. Now, that being said, when you played the game at a high level, your expectation when you come in to be coach, and I saw that, witnessed this from Joe Green, your expectation of your player is going to be what you used to do, how you did. The young guys today don't want that. The young guys today are concerned about contracts, money, cars, and houses. Okay?
I hear you.
Okay? Yeah, I know this is a family show. You saw I did that. But that's what they're concerned about. They're not concerned about legacy. They're not concerned about that other stuff. So as a linebacker who comes in there, you got other coaches who are being hired, like Jerry Osowski. Play with me. Key, don't get me wrong. Key was a hell of a linebacker, underside linebacker from Pitt. And when Key got in the game, Key knew what he was going to do, where he was going to be. He knew where everybody was going to be. So I see Jerry O being, you know, inside linebacker coach. He's all the linebacker coach now, but yeah, I can see him being inside linebacker coach. But what happens a lot of times is that I know me, and I have to, you know, I would have to dial it down. But my thing about it is, teaching the things that you know that can help those guys, you know, become successful. Yes, we can do. Like I said, going back to teaching them how to study, teaching them how to study film, teaching them how to study a poem, teaching them how to take care of their bodies and things of that nature. Yeah, you know, you can do that. But at the same time, setting a tone for practice, set a tone for how the game is supposed to be played. What happens a lot of time, Chris and Bob, is you got a guy, or you got a coach, or you have a coordinator who never played football, who hires guys who most of the time never play football, because what they don't want a lot of time is they don't want to say something in a meeting and have a Cardell Lake, LeVon Kirkland, Greg Lloyd, Chad Brown go, that ain't gonna work. Excuse my language. Like, that ain't gonna work. You know? Now, we wouldn't say it out loud. But we would probably get into the coach's meeting and go, now listen, man, this ain't gonna work. Because, you know, it hypothetically, we can put anything up on the board and assume that it's going to work. But you got to understand, those guys on the other side of the ball get paid too. But having played the game, understand that we cannot run it. Every time we used to get in this defense, we used to get killed. And that's like, yeah, and then just scratch it. So what happens is it becomes more of a, gosh, how can I say this nice? It becomes more of a measuring contest. Did you give Tweety line? Y'all get it?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, it becomes that. Guys are more afraid that you're going to be more right than they are, and the players are going to look at you more than they look at them, and they don't want that. And so that's why they will hire a guy as a linebacker coach or as a head coach or as a coordinator that, and he'll come in here, hire guys that same way. And so now it's like, you got to listen to guys that study football. But like I say, if you ain't never had your hand hit in between two helmets in Green Bay when it's like -14 degrees, if you ain't never, you know, had your shoulder almost separated and it goes down your spine and you ain't got no feeling in your hands or your shoulders for 3 or 4 plays, if you've never had that done and you never got dinged, what they call concussion. Now, we never got dinged. And, you know, wanted to come out of the game, but didn't come out of the game because you didn't want to let your team. If you've never done that, I kind of didn't want to talk to you. And if you ever get a chance to talk to Marvin Lewis, Marvin Lewis will attest to what I'm saying. I called Marvin for probably the first 4 or 5 years Marvin was in Pittsburgh. When I found out that Marvin had never played football, I was like, this dude coming here, all these freaking drills, and we've been here for, I tell you, we laugh at it now. You know, we laugh at it now, but Marvin's coming out and says, I'm going to do 3 of these drills and I'm done. And we got a game to play. I said, this is not college. You know, and some people say, well, Greg, you know, you would be, no, it's like, I got to get me ready to play on Sunday. Marvin's going to be up in the booth. If I'm tired, y'all going to be looking at me like, well, Greg was hanging out all night. What's going on with him? So this is what I'm talking about. I do what I need to do to get me ready. And going out in practice and running 15 different drills in pregame, warm up. Or it's not helping me. It's not helping me at all. All it's doing is making me tired. It's going to make me even more tired come Sunday. So knowing your craft, knowing what you need to do to get you in, that's what position coaches do. And I think that's what happened. We, as former players, have such a high level of what we used to do and how we did it, underpaid and all. And these guys are overpaid, and they don't want to do half of what we used to do. And they're not ready for us to come in and tell these guys that, because it's like, you know, I mean, I say, you know, what guy wants to hear Greg Lloyd say, that's garbage? You know, I mean, he could be trying his best, but, you know, and he said, hey, coach, what you think of that? I'm going to say garbage. If it's garbage, I'm going to say garbage. I'm not going to sit there and tell a guy making, you know, regardless of how much money he's making, but he's a professional football player, you know, one of however many we got in the league, a few, I'm not going to sit there and tell him that he did something good when it's not. When I can get somebody from the stands to come down and put a uniform on and do exactly what he just did, I'm not going to tell him that. But see, that's what happens a lot of times. Coaches are stroking these guys and doing all that because of, you know, some scout got him, brought him in, and, you know, they don't pay him now, and it'll make this scout look bad if they, you know, get rid of him. And it's like, well, guess what? You got two options. You can get rid of this scout and hire somebody else, or you can get rid of this guy and get the money to somebody who wants to play. My thing about it is, at the end of the day, as a team, or because it's a corporation, you're about making money. And the way you make money is win. Am I wrong?
Nope. You're right. Agreed.
But like I say, you know, you can't, football is not a game of feelings. You can't be out there carry your feelings around on your shoulder pad. Football is one of those type of games where you keep your feelings, you know, you lock the bad boys up in the chest and leave them in the car, in the parking lot, you leave them at home with your wife, your girlfriend, or you leave them somewhere, but you don't bring them on the football field. And like you say, everybody's not ready for that. You see, everybody's not. You think coaches and D coordinators ready to hear me talk like this in a meeting? They're not ready for that. They say, this is garbage. They're not ready for that. They're not ready for that. Because the first thing I'm going to say, what you don't done? You know? And everybody's like, why you say? Because my thing is, like, I'm just trying to get them to understand that there's more than one way to do things. Just the way you're doing it theoretically, I understand that. You studied that, but I played it. And because I played it, I'm telling you that's not going to work. Okay? So let's go out here and run it. Yeah. And then when we run it 3 or 4 times, you see it not working, and then you still put it in the game plan? To me, that's what we call doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. What we call that?
Insanity. Yep.
Yeah, that's what it's called, insanity. But we want to be insane on the football field, but we want to be insane in a way where the other teams over there going like, listen, we can't wait to get out of here. Referee, please let that clock keep running. We can't wait to get out of here. And that's how you want to be. But like you said, you know, we want to get back to tailgate a game where, you know, let the guys play. You know, I mean, like I said, you know, if you see a guy, you think his target is obvious. I understand that. But man, to be able to put a lick on somebody and you can hear it in the next state, come on. What's happened to that? It's like, what's happened to that? I mean, people used to come to Pittsburgh, man, and it was like, buddy, if y'all win today, I promise y'all, y'all going to be in the hot tub before y'all get off that bus. Everybody else is going to be in the hot tub with ice on putting together. That's how we play. Am I lying, Chris? Am I lying?
No.
That's how we play.
No, you are not.
That's how we play. But that's also how we practice. We practice that way also. The games on Sunday were easy compared to the practice. And I think that's the big difference now. And I understand, like, try to keep everybody. But like you say, you look at the ratio of injuries when we played and injuries right now. What's the difference?
Yeah. Agreed. Greg, can't thank you enough for bringing your passion and coming back and being a part of the show. You're fantastic, my friend. We always enjoy time.
Hey, man, I appreciate you guys having me. Anytime you guys need me, man, just give me a shout. I don't get to talk football that often to people because most people don't have a clue. So I appreciate it.
Thanks,
Greg.
Take care. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
All right, Chris and Bob, man. Thanks for having me again. You guys have a good night.
Good night.
You too. See you, Greg.
All right. Talk to you.
That's the great Greg Lloyd, Bob. It doesn't get any better than that.
Doesn't sound like a guy approaching his 56th birthday. Do you ever see a guy that intense at that age, Chris?
No.
But he brings it every time he's on. And you know, when you ask that question about coaching, I knew the answer before he said it. It's not about race. It's not about resume. It's about his expectations and how he played the game. And he went into it in detail, didn't he?
Yes, he did. I love that about him. All right, we've got our next guest, Tony Collins, and our 5-star picks of the week right on the other side of this real quick station break.